It's 9 minutes, as it's 6 minutes and 30 seconds after 9 o'clock. Boy, I'm not starting out well this morning. At any rate, John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The United States Conference of Mayors Climate Protection Summit wrapped up last week. And the idea of mayors having anything to do with climate protection or the environment is sort of a, maybe it's not a new concept, but it's certainly getting some press coverage, with Mayor Bloomberg of New York is insisting that all the taxi cabs be hybrids. You'll see a lot of hybrid buses if you go to various cities around the United States. And a lot of news stories are coming out about mayors taking the initiative on the environment. Why is that happening? Is this a good thing? We don't know. Is it a bad thing? We don't know that either. We'll try and answer some of these questions, and we invite you to join us at 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, please use our local number, 227-2050. We'll have two guests this hour. First of all, in the studio with me this morning is the mayor of the city of Superior, Wisconsin, Dave Ross. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, John.
Make sure your microphone is turned on. And then joining us a little bit later this hour will be Tom Potter, the mayor of Portland, Oregon. And he'll be talking about some environmental initiatives, particularly green building and things like that, that his city is participating in. But certainly, Mayor Ross, the headlines, not necessarily always on the front page, but there's been a constant buzz of stories about things that cities have been doing either together or in concert with other cities to try to have an impact on their local environments. And, well, I guess that's kind of why we're here. And the fact you're here because I know you personally, and you and I have had a number of conversations about things like the Great Lakes Initiative and some things like that. So let's just start out by talking about, from your perspective, why is it that mayors and cities are jumping into the fray here and taking some initiative on environmental issues?
You know, John, mayors really do answer directly to people. They're the most closely elected official. They're the ones people feel comfortable to pick up the phone and talk to during the day. They're the ones that they're willing to appeal to directly. You know, the legislatures are vast bodies of people who have to make decisions in concert with each other. Mayors have a little more decision-making authority over their communities because they're leading their communities in whatever direction that mayor has decided to take. Mayors have, for a long time, I think, been a little silent on some of these issues. And just as legislative bodies speak together, mayors are now beginning to band together and say, we need to speak with one voice. And that is why the Great Lakes Initiative, which was founded by Mayor David Miller of Toronto and Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago, this is why organizations like this have been born and are becoming very effective on the environmental scene.
What are some of the issues that you're looking at specifically?
A lot of the issues that we're looking at, of course, with the Great Lakes Initiative is what impacts these Great Lakes. What are we doing about the environmental challenges? One of the gripes that we've had for a good long time is there's something like 150 different organizations that have some influence on the environmental impact of the Great Lakes. Lots of dollars are being spent, and some of this is duplicative. Some of it is spent, a lot of it, on the bureaucracy of talking about the issues and raising the issues, and we believe not enough dollars are being really put into really solving the problem.
There's been a lot of talk about things, for example, like ecotourism. Cities have been kind of designating themselves as green or green-friendly and making a real effort to put a label on their communities as being, hey, we're doing something about the environment. I mean, clearly there's got to be some economic advantage to doing that.
There really is, because as we green our communities and make our communities just more pleasant to live in, the idea of a concrete jungle is no longer an appealing idea for an urban atmosphere. And this idea that we need to really take care of what's happening where most people in our country live, which is in large urban areas, the cities. And by taking care of that environment, now thinking about things such as green roofs and the idea that maybe we should be putting concrete down that is permeable, water runs straight through it instead of running off, addressing the issues of sewer outflows. You know, when we have large rain events, cities, many of us are still guilty of putting raw sewage right into our lakes and rivers. These are problems we need to collectively address because, as you know, John, it boils down to what? Money. And we need to have an effective voice to attract the dollars to change our communities.
Now, recently, the mayors and others in the Great Lakes Initiative had a meeting just across the St. Louis River from where we're sitting right now in Duluth, Minnesota, and they met for several days, talked about a lot of stuff. Could you just to kind of give our listeners a summary of some of the issues that came up and some of the initiatives that that came out of this or some of the things that were proposed?
Some of the issues, of course, are something we have very little control over. There was a lot of discussion about lake levels, the low water levels in the Great Lakes. But also we were able to talk about some things that we can change. And I think there's two categories of how we approach this. During one of the events sponsored by the Great Lakes Initiative, we talked about best practices, things cities can do to try to change the environment in their communities. The city of Superior, I was very proud to say that we presented some solutions to the problem. One of them is the fact that we are allowing our citizens to have a stormwater utility assessment of their homes so we can talk about runoff and stormwater and where it's going and how it's infiltrating into our sewer system, how it impacts our wastewater treatment plant, and a number of other things that happen, especially during large rain events. And so what we're doing here in the city of Superior is we're telling citizens, if you're having flooding problems or if you're having these kind of issues that are impacting our wastewater treatment system, we're going to help by subsidizing a study of your home and what's happening on your property.
And what's the response? What has been the response of citizens when you talk to them about initiatives such as this? How are citizens responding to this?
You know, I wish more were participating. You know, John, we did not expend all the dollars that we set aside, dollars we put to help pay for these kind of studies on people's properties. But as we get the word out, we're getting more participation, especially when someone has a basement that floods or has a yard that's not draining properly. Or if they hear that a city has had a discharge of raw sewage in the lakes and the rivers that they love.
One of the things that, this is the genesis of this program was the Conference of Mayors Climate Protection Summit. Cities have been taking the lead on trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Clearly, automobiles are a large source of greenhouse gases, and cars are where the cities are generally. What have you seen in terms of how much enthusiasm is there for really trying to get in and make some changes? We've seen some spectacular things happen, for example, in New York City, where the taxi cabs are, I think, either a portion of the fleet or the entire fleet is supposed to be hybrid vehicles. There's been some push for having E85 vehicles in city fleets and things like that. How is that progressing?
Well, first of all, I think we've made great progress from the standpoint of industry pollution, point source pollution. This is where we know where the pollution is coming from and where it's going. And that has been handled just wonderfully by our regulatory agencies, the EPA, the Corps of Engineers, the Wisconsin DNR. There's been a number of gains there. But where we're not having, where we're having a problem addressing the problems is in the kind of personal behavior that results in considerable pollution. Our automobiles obviously are a problem. I had a daughter who lived in California for 10 years. We visited the L.A. area on a regular basis, and it was sad to see that my daughter lived 4 miles from the base of the San Gabriel Mountains and couldn't see them. And they kind of normalize this kind of putrid air environment without really addressing this issue. And I think some of the gains that we're going to have to make in this area of pollution in our cities is directly related to personal behavior.
What about green building? And one of the complaints about how we're treating the environment has to do with things like urban sprawl and stuff like that. What can cities really do? I mean, are there efforts to zone certain areas for certain types of construction to try to take advantage of new technologies, and what incentives are there for private contractors and so forth to build green?
Well, you know, there's the smart growth ideas that are going throughout the country. What they're trying to do is get cities to stay on their same footprint instead of expanding their footprint. But it's calling for some things that require some social change. Giving a good example is that they're asking for people to live in denser environments where people are closer together, that there's more number of people per square foot than sometimes what people would really like to do. So we need to, first of all, change the culture to have them understand that greener areas surrounding our cities are important, but also better using the footprint that cities live on. And there's some advances being made because just the fact that new housing today, you know, your average new house, just incorporating standard building practices today, still improves energy consumption or reduces energy consumption considerably without making what you would call maybe green changes to this kind of construction. But there's gains being made. Some of the challenges are green construction is more expensive, and it requires more dollars. And so we've got to find incentives for people to take advantage of available technologies.
We're talking with the mayor of the city of Superior, David Ross, who's joined us in studio at about 9:30. Mayor Tom Potter from Portland, Oregon, will be joining us by telephone and talking about how things are going out there. And we invite you to join our conversation as well. Here are the phone numbers, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number, and it's good just about anywhere, but I understand that it's not good in Australia. In Milwaukee, please use 227-2050, 227-2050. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 19 after 9, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on today on the Ideas Network. After 11 o'clock this morning, Wisconsin's unofficial ambassador to wildlife is Larry Mueller's guest. He's Professor Scott Craven of the UW-Madison Department of Forestry and Wildlife Ecology. That's after 11 this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about mayors and cities and what they can do about some environmental issues. What are the issues facing cities? There was a national summit of mayors about climate change that just wrapped up, I believe, in Seattle. More on a more regional basis, the Great Lakes Initiative just finished 3 or 4 days of meetings in Duluth, Minnesota, where many mayors from the Great Lakes area and some mayors from cities in Canada along the Great Lakes got together to talk about environmental issues and what they could do collectively, what the problems were, and what could be done about it. We invite you to join our conversation this morning. Here are the phone numbers once again, 800-486-8655, 227-2050. Mayor David Ross of the City of Superior is my guest in the studio this morning, and looks like we've got some people that want to join us, and we'll do that in just a moment. But the one thing I wanted to bring up and get your thoughts on in the late 60s, there was a real debate, and in fact, it ended up being in 1970. It ended up being the national high school debate question about where environmental issues were most properly dealt with at the federal level, the state level, where. And the consensus at that time, and for many years after that, was that if you wanted to solve environmental problems, you had to do it from the federal level, because things like air pollution and water pollution and stuff like that do not respect political boundaries. They certainly don't even respect national boundaries. And so given that as a premise, One of the knocks on having states do it was that you'd be duplicating efforts all over the place and spending a lot of money you didn't need to spend. Is there a danger that if each city tries to do its own thing with the environment, we'll end up wasting some money somewhere?
There is that danger, because I think that danger is already occurring in Great Lakes Research. And as I said, the 150-some organizations that are all trying to address the problem of the impacts of the environment on our Great Lakes system. But some of the things locally that wouldn't be reproduced is such as cities that are taking the initiative to make sure in their community that they have these low-volume water flush toilets and low-water volume shower heads. These are things being taken on at the local level, something someone else is not going to step in and do what they're doing. Where we need the federal help is on the big issues such as sewer separation and, again, as we've talked about, sewage outflows into our waters. But the efforts within the community that cities can establish is things like this, is making sure that we're reducing water consumption, making sure that we're encouraging our citizens to use these light bulbs that don't take as much energy. Something simple, I was with Mayor Daley a couple years ago. He held a press conference on brushing your teeth. Now, who would ever think of a mayor having a press conference on brushing your teeth? But he was talking about a habit that individuals have of running the water while they're brushing their teeth. That sounds pretty simple thing, but just the fact if people turn off the faucet while they're brushing their teeth saves the impact of more water heading to the treatment plant and thus into our lakes and rivers.
Well, I'll tell you what, as someone who lives out in the country and has a holding tank, I don't leave the water on while I'm brushing my teeth, because I see a direct cost, because I have to have that tank pumped about once a month, and it costs about $80 to do that. That's a direct expense. I can see, I know where that water's going when it leaves the faucet. And maybe in a city, people don't think about that because the water just goes into the sewer and then they forget all about it. Even though there's a sewer tax, I don't know that people think about it in the same way. Maybe there's some education or a mindset that needs to be changed.
We really are trying to link the cost, you know, with the behavior, with the activity. It'd be different if you ran the water while you're brushing your teeth and immediately a guy knocked on your door and handed you a bill for doing that.
Yep.
You change your behavior right now. But what, and the other misunderstanding is in the Great Lakes area, we have plenty of water. We have an abundance of water, not like we're seeing in Atlanta where they're talking about they may have no water in 5 years. So they go, well, what's this issue about conserving water? Well, it has an impact on wastewater treatment plants. And do you want to continue to expand these plants to meet the demand of water that needs to be treated before it's put into our rivers and bays? So that means turning your faucet off to save you the burden of being taxed more for your behavior. And I can't think of a better incentive than to say, hey, change the behavior and maybe we can keep taxes in line.
Well, that sounds like a platform. You running for something? Let's go to the phones and take a call from, we'll go first to Roger in Dodgeville. Roger, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I want to briefly describe two situations and I have a question. I live in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, where I brought forth over a year and a half ago a rain garden proposal to the city to be put in a park to solve an erosion problem that erodes part of the park and then erodes one of the few gravel roads in Dodgeville. And it would have significantly reduced the erosion to the road. I brought it forth to the city council with most of the funding raised for it, 30 volunteers, 20 plant donors, and plus the Boy Scouts and a couple other groups ready to help install it. The city had to do some excavation, and we would take care of the rest. The city board approved it, pending the city engineer's approval. A year and a half later, I'm still trying to work with him to get it approved. And just last month, I called my alderperson again to check in on this and say, you know, the city engineer just sits and waits for us to bring in plans and then says what's wrong with it. And I'm not an engineer, and yet he required us to get engineered drawings. Thankfully, we found a volunteer. So there's a problem of bringing an idea to a city with volunteers and with money, and they still are not jumping on it or even letting it happen. And then in the village of Spring Green, I brought another rain garden project to the village board there, and they have a consulting engineer who was nearly hostile and actively obstructionist and stating things like, rain gardens are a fad, they're not going to last, there's no reason to do them. So, and then the board listened to their volunteer as opposed to me, who's someone they don't know. So what do you do in situations like this where you bring an idea to your village or city board people and they put you off and obstruct you and aren't helpful?
You know, one of the things you really need to do is educate those decision makers as to the importance of what you're doing. When I hear these comments about rain gardens, they're a fad, they're not going to last. Actually, rain gardens is great technology, natural technology, to clean the water before it hits our rivers and streams. We use rain gardens here in the city of Superior on Barker's Island. And water from a parking lot flows into a rain garden where all the sediment is left in the rain garden to naturally purify itself before the water actually goes out into our bay. I think a better job of educating your local elected officials and city administration people as to the importance of this task that you have taken on. And I think once they understand is there's a great benefit to a rain garden and having a rain garden in your community, I think they're going to make other decisions.
I don't know. Did that answer your question? Oh, I think we lost him. Let's go next to Marty in Green Bay. Marty, good morning.
Good morning, and it's great to hear that the mayors are working on saving our Great Lakes. Two-part question. In the city of Hammond, Indiana, I understand, or Gary, Indiana, this last year, BP, British Petroleum Oil Company, was dumping a lot of chemicals into the lake, and the EPA stepped in and said, you can't do this, and they stopped, and then they said, well, you're going to lose 5,000 jobs, and they said, okay, we don't want to lose a job, so they allowed them to keep dumping it. They're dumping the chemicals back in again, and that affects all of us. I know it's in Lake Michigan down there, but it's Lake Michigan all around. And the second, and what can we do about that? And the second part is, personally, I don't buy from BP anymore. but the second part is, Governor Richardson in Mexico had made the statement last week that, I know we have water shortages out here in the West, but we don't have to worry because we've got the Great Lakes. We can get it from there. And people jumped on them. So, I hear we're going to have the wars of the future are going to be about water. What can we do to make sure that we, A, stop BP from dumping chemicals into our water for profit, and what can we do to make sure other states don't take our water?
You know, you've cited a great example of how the Great Lakes Initiative has responded to a problem. The BP refinery expansion in Whiting, Indiana, even though that expansion had permit approvals by the state and they had all their permits in line and they met the guidelines for the expansion, many of us who looked at that permit and looked at the amount of suspended solids and ammonia and other chemicals going into the river thought, this is outrageous in this day and age when we have the technology to stop this kind of point source pollution. A great example is the Grand Calumet River, where still today municipalities and industry is dumping raw waste into that river, keeping it one of the most polluted rivers in the Great Lakes area. What you can do is what many citizens did in response to the Whiting permits, the BP expansion of that refinery, is to express your outrage and talk about the impact this is having on our environment. And I'll tell you what, they're taking a second look at those permits. Yesterday, the governor said that he was going to do a review of most of the major permits that were being issued by the state of Indiana. But what's also interesting is that they got BP to concede that they would reduce well below the levels of their permit and that they would institute and pay for the technology to make sure that water is going into their rivers and streams in Lake Michigan much cleaner. So all of us have a role, and I was very proud of the Great Lakes Initiative when they spoke up, and as a group of mayors, we spoke together with one voice, and I believe we saw some significant changes in that very situation.
Thanks a lot for the call, Marty. Let's go next to Steve in Oshkosh.
Hi. I just checked the website of the U.S. Mayors conference, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. It's usmayors.org. And I see the list of Wisconsin signatories to the U.S. Mayors Climate Protection Agreement, but Superior is not among them. I'm wondering what's up.
Yeah, I got a good explanation for that. We just rejoined the U.S. Conference of Mayors about a month ago. And so we were not participants because we were not members. But that has now changed, and we are a full participant, and we have become official members as of just a matter of weeks ago.
A matter of membership, you have to pass a resolution or sign it as a mayor.
We have a lot of different groups asking the council to pass resolutions concerning a whole host of issues. And, you know, I have a small gripe with resolutions. It goes back to this issue where we're doing all the talking, not doing any doing. And that has, for me, we talk about eco-cities, we talk about a number of different things that we like to declare ourselves. I'd like to see the benchmark standard for being an eco-city or a city who passes a resolution that they actually meet the standard. I'll give you an example. Recently, a significantly sized city passed a resolution to reduce their water consumption under the Water Compact 15% below their consumption of the year 2000. And then a few weeks later, this same city announced a new use of water for a recreational area, up to 200 million gallons of water. I have a problem with us saying things and not doing. And so I like the standard of us being measured not by what we say, what we pass, what resolutions we support, by what actions we actually take. Too many times we like to talk, and very little times do we like to really take action and improve the environments in our communities.
Steve, thanks for the call. I want to go back. I realize I missed the second part of Marty from Green Bay's question. The second part of her comment or question was about Governor Richardson's comments about, there's no real water shortage. We've always got the Great Lakes. Water diversion has been a sensitive issue in this part of the country for a long time, and conspiracy theorists insist that the reason for the fact that Lake Superior is 2 feet below where it's supposed to be is that that water is being piped to Las Vegas or someplace. I don't know. But what do you think when you hear comments like this?
Well, first of all, we're not only experiencing a 2 foot drop in lake levels, but go to the lower lakes. Some of them are 51, 52 inches below their normal lake levels. I don't believe there is any interest whatsoever in taking lake water and exporting it to another region or part of the country. I tell you, I'm very bothered by the bottled water industry. They have large amounts of water that are taken out of the lakes, and granted, they're being sent out 8 ounces at a time or 10 ounces at a time, but we've created a brand new behavior in our culture, which is taking millions upon millions of plastic bottles and putting them in the environment, and then drinking water from these bottles rather than just simply going to a tap and refreshing yourself that way. We are facing challenges where people are looking at Great Lakes water, but I'll tell you, there is no political will in any of the states, and including our friends in Canada who are very much involved with this issue of having any extractions of water and shipping them to other parts of the country.
Now, we mentioned the BP refinery expansion project down in Indiana. In Superior, we've got Murphy Oil, which is perhaps the largest or one of the largest private employers in the city, and they have announced at least some plans for a rather large expansion here. What sorts of environmental challenges is that kind of expansion going to pose, and how is that being met by the city?
Well, you know, Murphy Oil has been just a great partner when it comes to clean water, clean air. They've reduced their pollutants by over 90% at their plant. Their wastewater treatment system is state-of-the-art. If you would compare what the water going into our bay from Murphy Oil and that what was proposed by the BP Whiting Refinery, it was like night and day when it come to the amount of suspended solids and ammonia and other chemicals that BP was going to dump right into Lake Michigan. The refinery here in Superior is state-of-the-art. They understand their commitment to the environment. In fact, I talked just recently with the plant manager manager, and people from Murphy Oil. And the outcry over BP Whiting has certainly set a new standard for what communities are expecting when a refinery is in their city. And I fully expect Murphy Oil to exceed those standards and take advantage of available technology.
Let's go next to a call from John in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Good morning.
Hi,
John. Thanks for calling.
Morning, and thanks for taking my call. My question, well, first let me commend the Governor's Association, or the Mayor's Association. I think it's critical that local governments get involved in this issue. My concern, however, is that not so much with the mayors, but in general, a lot of the solutions we talk about for climate change and other environmental problems, I view as being Band-Aid approaches, or sometimes the cat chasing its tail. I see the root problem is human population growth, but it never gets discussed, primarily because it's such a challenging issue to think about. Is there any hope or any way that this issue can elevate itself and be discussed more? And are there any potential solutions, or is this just something that is going to continue to not be addressed?
You know, John, you really raised a great issue. When I was in college in the 70s with my good friend John Munson here across the desk here in the radio station, population was a huge issue about the expanding global population. I believe we're going to double in population from the early 60s to now. That is an issue that you don't even hear discussed. You know, a second issue is also, are we going to find substantial replacement of alternative energy besides fossil fuels? And wind generation and different types of fuels made from corn and other sources is not going to even touch the growth in energy demand for the world. And I believe we need to start having some real good discussions about things like nuclear energy. Nuclear energy doesn't pollute. We could go to an all-electric economy. We could get rid of emissions from automobiles in our large congested urban cities. We need to throw the discussion wide open, because Band-Aid approaches are not going to solve our energy needs as well as protect our environment. And John, I think your observation is just an excellent one.
Thanks for the call, John. Let's go next to Chris in Wauwatosa. Chris, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. No problem. And John, just real quick, going to your holding tank example, I did notice that the electric companies, at least around the Milwaukee area, switched our meters. So you can no longer, you know, look at it and see, kind of get an idea when it's spinning, how fast it's spinning, how much electricity you're using. And I think being able to see that would have an effect. But my comment was that with the mayors being more successful at taking on this issue politically, is that it comes down to, as a lot of things do, to where they get their campaign donations from, and they're not under as much pressure as even the state assembly and state senate types are due to campaign finance. And I'd like to hear the mayor's comment on that, please.
Well, you've hit a nerve, sir. You have hit a nerve.
Yeah, way to go.
I am just disgusted with the political system that we've created in the United States. If you want to know how your local representatives in either in Washington or your capital in Madison or wherever state you're from, if you want to know how they vote, just look at who their contributors are. Look at where the money comes from. And once in a while, you know, they play lots of games of proposing legislation that'll never pass, even though it seems like it's against their major supporters. There's so many games. The system is broken with money. It's broken with this absolute need for politicians to raise dollars at a fast rate, and they're willing to compromise the environment. They're willing to compromise the taxpayers' needs, all in the face of campaign dollars. You know, if you're running for Congress and you get elected, you have to raise $10,000 a day in order to keep your seat in Washington. And to me, that's a crime. And if we're going to address real problems, we got to get all of the special interests and their dollars out of the pockets of the politicians and start making decisions which is best for the taxpayers.
I say let's fund political campaigns with pledge drives. I know some people who have some experience with that. Chris, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Jill in Madison. Jill, good morning.
Good morning. Great show. I have 2 points, so could I have a follow-up after my initial point?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. And my first comment isn't this. It's just I wanted to, as an aside, I grew up in Australia where, as you no doubt know, water is an ongoing issue, and we would never, ever dream of not turning off the faucet when we clean our teeth. But what I wanted to make a comment about was last week I heard Robert Kennedy Jr. make a comment about having been in Russia recently, and he was talking about the very advanced technology of the water system there, where they actually treat their stormwater into drinking water. And I'm wondering, is something like this being considered?
Stormwater, not yet. Our local utility is using water from wells or directly taking water from Lake Superior. There has been a lot of conversation about using stormwater for other purposes than human consumption. In other words, trying to replace some of our water needs with stormwater, such as for the flushing of toilets, watering our yards, and a number of other activities that people take on by using water that doesn't come from a treated source or a source that had to go through a treatment plant. And yes, there's been a lot of discussion. I know there's in this idea of green buildings, they're talking about capturing rainwater and then running all of their non-human consumption sources of water from that captured rainwater. So yes, there's a lot of conversation about that. But right now, the cost of doing that far exceeds the cost of water being delivered at its, in its present way. So there is no huge impact of savings on any of these new technologies.
And your follow-up, Jill?
I heard
Jill,
you
are you...
Hello?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard that your guest was talking about nuclear energy to be considered, and certainly and we need to be able to discuss that in great detail because it keeps coming up, and what we don't talk about is what do you do with the nuclear waste. Rather than nuclear energy, we need to be focusing so much more on sustainable energy, and it's not impossible if we really put our money where our mouth is and follow up on that.
Well, sustainable energy is not replacing at a fast enough growth and increase of consumption. And I'll kindly disagree with you. I believe they have solved the problem of nuclear waste. The CAS system and the storage system, they have spent hundreds of millions of dollars researching this. And I believe we already have a system to store nuclear waste in a very safe and an environmentally friendly way.
We want to welcome to the program another guest. We have joining us by telephone from Portland, Oregon, the mayor of Portland, Tom Potter. Mayor Potter, good morning. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us today.
Good morning, John. And actually, I'm calling from Chicago. I'm in a conference there.
Oh, okay. The wonders of technology. You could be anywhere in the world. I'm on the air in Milwaukee, and I'm sitting in Superior. So, you know, how cool is this? You have achieved something of a national reputation as a champion of green building and other environmentally friendly things. And the topic this hour, we've been speaking about how cities are taking the lead in trying to solve environmental problems locally. Tell us a few things that you've been doing in Portland that you've been able to put in place as the mayor and how they're working.
Well, you know, actually, it's not just the mayor and our form of government, it's also city commissioners. So between the city council members and myself, we have done a number of things. In fact, we've been on an environmental program since 1991, and Portland is one of the few cities in the United States that has reduced its greenhouse gases, and to the point where even though our population's increased since 1991, our greenhouse gas emissions are the same as they were in 1991. So we've done a lot of things. For instance, on transportation, we have what's called transit-oriented housing, where we try to, as new housing is built, put them closer to the transit systems so that they don't have to drive or walk too far in order to get a bus, a light rail, or streetcar. So that's one of the many things. We also have one of the largest biodiesel fleets in the United States in our that's using pure biodiesel, not a 5 or 15%, but pure. So we also have one of the largest percentages of people who bike to work of any city in the United States right now. Now, right down to things like with police, rather than police command people who normally aren't going Code 3 anywhere, we're having them drive hybrid cars.
Right now, the conference you're attending is the Green Build International Conference and Exposition in Chicago. What's going on there?
Well, it's actually a pretty amazing event. 10 years ago when it started, the first Green Build had about 900 people attending. Today, there will be 25,000 people at the McCormick Expo Center here in Chicago. And it's just, it's quite amazing. The thing is that, and I heard some of the discussion before I came on the line about what local governments can do. With the current administration in Washington that won't even sign the Kyoto Accord, it's really up to local communities. And if the old axiom is true about all politics are local, it means that locally, mayors and city commissions and county commissions have to get together and work together to try to create a better understanding of what we can do. We have the technology in place that can impact global warming.
One of the raps on the Kyoto Accords has been that if we implement them, we're going to wreck our economy. It's going to cost too much money to do all of this. What has been your experience in Portland in terms of the economic impact of the initiatives that you've put in place?
You know, I think, in fact, we know in Portland that you can be good stewards of the environment and be innovative and look for clean energy sources, and it can be profitable. We have a developer in Portland that has built more LEED certified buildings. That is, those are the most energy efficient buildings. He's built more buildings than any other developer in the United States. And they're exporting that now around the country. So the purpose of the Green Build Conference here is to begin to share more information. In fact, I'm meeting with Mayor Daley later today to talk about how we can work together to exchange information, to work together on issues all the way from conserving energy to clean energy to having actual food systems in place that are regional rather than national. You know, the average person in the United States, their food travels 1,500 miles to get to their plate, and that's just way too far because you're consuming a lot of fossil fuels to get them there. So local people, local governments can do a lot to begin to turn this global warming thing.
We need to take a break and take care of a couple of things that are important for radio stations everywhere to do. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the role of cities and the role that mayors are playing in dealing with environmental impacts of human existence. I guess we could say that on public radio. Existence is a good word. I have with me in the studio the mayor of the city of Superior, David Ross. And joining us by telephone is the mayor of Portland, Oregon, Mayor Potter, and we'll be getting back to our discussion with Mayor Tom Potter and Mayor Dave Ross in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9 before 10, and after 10 o'clock this morning, I'll be talking about whether or not it should be a requirement that college students spend at least one semester studying in another country. We'll be talking about study abroad programs after 10 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about mayors taking the lead. The recent conclusion of the United States Conference of Mayors Climate Protection Summit kind of put this out there in the news headlines. More regionally, the Great Lakes Initiative has made headlines around the Great Lakes Basin with some of the things that they've proposed. And we've been hearing a lot about how individual cities are trying to do what they can in their local areas to solve the big problems of the environment and climate change and so forth. And we're talking about that this hour. And joining us to give the mayor's perspective on this topic, we have two guests with us this hour. In the studio with me is the mayor of the city of Superior, David Ross. And on the phone, we have Mayor Tom Potter from Portland, Oregon. And Mayor Potter, I wanted to ask you about something called the Mayor's Innovation Project. What is that?
Well, it's a series of projects to make government not only more efficient, but more accessible to the average citizen. But it also has a couple of pieces in there about environmental issues. And basically, we were asking all the different departments of the city of Portland what they could do to either conserve energy, use renewable energy, or reduce somehow carbon emissions. And so You know, it went all the way from biofuels to also ensuring that each agency and each department uses recycled paper rather than original paper. So there was a number of things that the departments came up with where they felt they could save some of the issues that affect the environment. So, for instance, in our maintenance bureau, we have folks who go out and do road repairs, and how they do that is that often they'll go out and dig up repair a road, and then 2 days later, a utility will come in and tear up the same road. And, of course, to taxpayers, that looks like a waste of money, and it is. But it also creates an additional burden on the environment. So those are the kind of things that every day that people in government and, quite frankly, citizens can do to keep our environment and make our environment a little bit better.
Let's take a phone call. We'll go to Bill in Milwaukee. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, this is an amazing coincidence. Mayor Potter, my wife was offered a job in her Portland office, in her company's Portland office, just yesterday. So, anyways, forgive me. I was wondering what you guys thought about roads. I mean, you've already kind of answered my question, but the road surfaces, I mean, do you support like a different type of concrete? I mean, I know there's like porous concrete, or just how do you reduce the rainwater, the stormwater problem is my basic question, but especially when it relates to roads. And that's all. Thank you.
Mayor Potter, why don't you take that one first, and then I want to hear Mayor Ross respond to that as well.
Well, you know, there's two things that Portland's working on. One, the caller's correct about most roadways have impervious surfaces. That is, the water runs off. And once it runs off, it becomes stormwater, and how you manage the stormwater becomes really important. So we are experimenting around the city with impervious road systems. For instance, where our light rail goes through downtown Portland, we're using bricks with sand in between so that it's not sealed and the water can go down between and soak into the ground. The other one are bioswales that we put alongside the edge of the road, and on a macadam road where it is high in the middle and curves down on the sides, the water runs to the side and goes into these bioswales, which are basically small garden-like settings that are, instead of having a curb, you've got a bioswale there. So those are two things that can help control it. Once it gets into the system, then you have to be able to treat it rather than allowing it just to go directly into a river or other body of water.
Mayor Ross?
You know, the larger concern as well is the load of traffic. We need to address traffic congestion and the number of cars that are being put onto our highway. It's affecting air quality as well as more impervious surfaces being down to accommodate higher traffic loads. One of the things we're doing in Superior is we're looking very carefully at our transit system to make sure that system is available, ready, works well, and is convenient for people who get on the bus. This is, we're hoping, will help reduce the need for personal transportation in a 6-ton car driven by one person. The other thing that we're looking at quite seriously is how we're managing stormwater. We just are instituting a stormwater utility. Now, this is an assessment on every single taxpayer in our community, but we need to manage stormwater and make sure that stormwater is filtered in some way before it reaches our rivers and our lake. We have a unique problem here in Superior, Wisconsin. We have we're sitting on a shelf of solid clay, 200 feet of it. So we don't have the permeable aspects of our topography in order to help us use other things such as French drains or other types of systems which allow groundwater to soak into the surface. But we're addressing those challenges and getting better at it.
We're just about out of time for today. In fact, we've got about a minute and a half left. The mayors have been becoming much more prominent in terms of the discussion about the environment, and yet some would say, well, so what? You know, your city does something, and nobody else does anything else. What does it really matter? Is this a valid criticism or not? And Mayor Potter, why don't you take that one, and I'll give you the last word, I think.
Well, you know, it's actually a valid criticism in one respect, and that is, more cities, more people need to do something. What I think that we can demonstrate today is that we've got the technology that can begin to reverse global warming, but people have to be able to use it. Secondly, that it's cost effective. Companies can make money installing environmentally sound pollution control, rainwater runoff dispersal systems. All of these things can make a difference. And I think it's really comes down to we've got to create a new social movement in this country that says protecting the environment is protecting our families and our communities, and that we all have to play a part in it. And I think mayors can play a really important part by ensuring that their cities, and particularly in their policies and practices, that they institute sound environmental systems that restrict the carbon emissions, because that's really what we want to go for. And so in Portland, we are actually looking at imposing a tax on buildings that emit a higher level of carbon than other buildings, so that we begin over a period of time to begin to rein in those buildings that are poorly built and ensure sound, eco-friendly buildings and communities.
And thank you very much, Mayor Potter, for this time, and Mayor Ross.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.